When your company mission is to make an impact in the lives of families with your products and services, it makes buy-in from the team very, very easy. Welcome to the Well-Rounded Leaders Podcast. I am your host, Tony Davis, coming to you from the beautiful beaches here in Jacksonville, Florida. And as I always do when I start my podcast episodes, thank you for listening. Thank you for your support, for supporting the show, for rating the show 5 stars. I appreciate it. And as we always start the episodes off with the quote from Bo Schembechler, legendary Michigan, University of Michigan head football coach, every day you get better or you get worse. You never stay the same. And my hope for you listening today is that you take away something from today's leadership conversation that makes you better and that helps you grow in your leadership. We should all be striving to get better. Get better either physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, or to be better leaders every single day. And can you imagine if we just increase or we improve ourselves 1%, just 1% every single day, that's going to compound. And we're going to be better off for it over time. And that's what we should strive to do. That's the beginning of self-leadership, and that's what it means to be a well-rounded leader. If you want more information about being a well-rounded leader, about the podcast, about myself, and want to listen to past shows, or even get in touch with me, visit the website www.wellroundedleaders.com. I am joined today on episode 19 by CEO of Gab Wireless, Nate Randall. Now, Gab Wireless sells cellular phones for families to protect their kids from the dangers of regular smartphones. And their mission is simple. We provide safe technology for kids and peace of mind for parents. I love it. And the one thing that you're going to take away from this episode is that Nate is an authentic leader. He has impactful stories that he shares on this episode that has shaped him into the leader that he is today. And see, here's the thing. You hear people throw around the term servant leader a lot, don't you? It shows an element of vulnerability to say that, hey, look, I'm a servant leader. But then we also have seen self-proclaimed servant leaders actually lead quite the opposite of what we would think a servant leader should be. Not Nate. Nate lives it. He's an all-around good dude. He really is. He's a great follow on LinkedIn. And as I said, he's authentic. And as a result, the culture of his organization is truly about helping and making the lives of the families that buy their cell phones safer through the use of their technology. You're going to love this episode. This episode is not only inspirational, but I hope you find it aspirational too. You're probably going to want to listen to this one a couple times. I know you're going to love this episode. Well, welcome to the Well-Rounded Leaders Podcast. I have the pleasure of speaking with CEO of Gab Wireless, Nate Randall. Nate, thanks for coming on, brother.
Of course, Tony. Thanks for reaching out.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny, I stumbled across one of your LinkedIn posts. You're great on LinkedIn. I'm sure you've heard that before. He's a great follow, so you, any listeners out there, very inspiring, good information. But it was a post, and I'm a dad. I got 3 sons, 2 in college and 1 in high school. And it really resonated with me. Your post was around Father's Day, and you talked about your stepdad, I believe.
Yeah.
It just kind of hit home, you know, to me as a dad, and you know, kind of an emotional post. And you showed a little bit of vulnerability there. So I'm like, man, I'm going to reach out to this guy. But he's got a great story. Looked up your bio, you know, sports guy. I love it. You know, so it seems like, you know, in a different time and a place, we'd be having beer somewhere talking about the Chiefs whipping up on whoever they're going to be playing. So,
yeah, we still should do that.
Absolutely. Well, hey, I am in Florida, and this is the vacation capital of the world. So if you get tired of vacationing out in the West Coast, I don't know where you vacation, but hey, if you're ever in Jacks Beach, look me up.
Done. Thank you for the offer.
but anyway, seriously, let's talk a little bit about your background and your stepfather and what he meant. And I know you've got some other elements to your story that are very impactful to the person then the leader that you are today.
Yeah, I think starting with family is a good representation of who I am and who I want to be known for. So that's a great place to start. My biological dad quit when I was five. He walked out, didn't pay child support. My mom was left with next to nothing, literally. She had, I was five at the time, and then I have a baby sister who's almost 2 years younger. And watching my mom struggle for several years, cover the bills, two jobs, making ends meet. And then she meets my second dad, my stepdad, and they get married. And the way he stepped into my life and became this unbelievable father figure and hero, and then ultimately helped put me on the right path instead of what could be so many wrong paths. Mm-hmm. He's my hero. I think the term hero gets thrown around a lot and it's way overused. I have one hero. I have a lot of people I look up to. I have a lot of athletes I admire. I only have one hero. And that's my dad. I don't even call him my stepdad. He adopted me. He's every bit my dad. And that's why I shared the post of Father's Day, is I felt like at this point in my life, it was a great time to share publicly what he's meant to me.
Your story doesn't end there. What was it about your stepdad? And obviously, you know, the way he's impacted you, he's shown you unconditional love, I'm sure, beyond. Well, go ahead and finish your story. Finish the story about what happened with your mom after they were married, because I think that helps to really illustrate the love that he showed and really the impact that he had. Go ahead.
Yeah, more than happy to. So she was single for a couple of years. She gets remarried to Steve Randall. They have my little brother. So I got a little brother, little sister. Mm-hmm. They're married for a little over 2 years. She's never been happier. I remember as a 7 or 8 year old kid at that point, looking at my mom and not understanding the context of everything, the challenges of marriage and divorce and everything that goes in. I was a kid, mm-hmm. but I remember specifically looking at my mom and saying, she's so happy. She's so happy. She's doing so well. Like a kid rooting for something they really care. My mom's happy. They were building a house, and her coming from next to nothing. He was an attorney, an established attorney, 10 years older. His career was booming. It was everything she'd hoped for. And then she's traveling down to Salt Lake. We lived about 30 minutes away from Salt Lake in Utah. And somebody that had been on a graveyard shift all night at a construction site ran a stoplight and took my mom's life instantly. Mm-hmm. And so at 9, my biological dad's gone. My mom's gone. I've got a 7-year-old sister and a 2-year-old little brother and a stepdad. And from that point on, when you ask, well, what was the real impact he had in your life? My grandparents, my mom's parents, mm-hmm. came to him and said, look, you've got your own law practice. You have your son that you had with our daughter. You got these two kids that aren't even yours. We're more than happy to take the kids. You can come see them whenever you want. We'll raise them. And he was adamant. And this is my grandma telling me this story. She said, your dad was adamant and said, these are my kids. She is my wife. This is my life. And I'm going to do whatever it takes to raise these kids the right way. I'm almost 47. He's been my hero for 38 years. Best thing that ever happened to me. Worst experience ever to lose my mom at 9. Mm. And the best thing to ever happen to my life is who she chose to marry on the second go around.
Yeah, that is just phenomenal, that story. And that just thinking about that, just is an amazing man for sure. And I haven't even met him. How long were they married before this happened?
A little over 2 years.
So only 2 years. And now he's had the opportunity to just say, you know what? Yeah, thanks. Your family, go ahead, take them. But he didn't, and he could have. And he had his own career. That's phenomenal. And that says something. And you look at the society that, it's all in the news and you know what, all the stuff that's going on. And you just wonder, it makes you feel good about people you know, anymore because of, you know, what we're thrust in our face through social media and Twitter and the news all the time. It's just, it's a breath of fresh air to hear a story like that. And so what did you take away from that? Okay, let's back up. Nine years old. That's heavy, man. That's how did you process that as a 9 year old? And
I don't know if I did. Excuse me. You're nine. I was really close to my mom. Mm-hmm. She's gone. I remember crying myself to sleep all the time. But one thing that my new dad, suggested to me, and it was a genius move. He said, "Your room is yours. So here's our rule. Your room has no rules. You're going to struggle. You're going to miss your mom like crazy, just like I do. But your room is a place where you can go and feel whatever emotion you want to feel. You don't want to make your bed? Don't make your bed. You want to put posters all over the wall? Put posters all over. Do whatever you got to do to make it a place where you can go and be you." And as soon as he gave me that license, because my mom was make the bed, vacuum your floor, close her, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
But in his genius, he wanted to create this space for me where I could just go be me. My entire back wall behind my bed was Jordan.
Nice.
Every poster I could get. Down the right side was Bo Jackson. Down the side across from Jordan was McEnroe. And then I had windows. And I took Sports Illustrated pictures and cut them out. And anywhere I had wallpaper or paint, I put sports pictures up. So I would lay in my room when I was feeling alone, missing my mom. And I would look at these images and say, if I could just be Bo Jackson, if I could just be, and by the way, I'm now 5'11". So there's no hope of anything other than a little bit of a baseball stretch, not much there. But it gave me something to dream about. And I ended up working at Nike. Had to have been part of me imagining what could be if my life just wasn't so difficult as it is right now. So my dad gave me all these spaces and places to be myself instead of all these rules and telling me to get over it, stop being so emotional. He couldn't have been better for me in making sure that I had a safe place to grow up.
What did you take away from that? That you don't forget something like that. You know, you're dealing with something that's difficult. And as a 9 year old, it's hard for anybody, but much less a 9 year old. And he's just helped you in such a tremendous way so that you do feel safe. You do feel like you have a place to go. Did that resonate enough? You know, how did that carry over into your parenting, into you as a leader?
I do certain things today because I lost my mom and because I had the opportunity to be raised by my dad, Steve. Mm-hmm. I'm at Gab Wireless because I had this void in my career of being at Nike, being at Callaway Golf, loving those experiences. But if I sell one more pair of sneakers or one more set of golf clubs, what impact am I having? Mm-hmm. And I love those places and I love the people I work with. When I heard about Gab and I knew that I could come here and be a part of something that would have an immediate impact every single day, I now, with our amazing team and parents all over the country, get to create safe tech experiences for kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's a complete circle back to a kid that didn't feel safe, who lost his mom, who was with some guy he didn't really know, who became his hero, who created a safe space for him to grow up, is now creating safe experiences for kids and families.
Now,
I would not be a Gab without the influence and upbringing of my dad.
Yeah, and that's phenomenal. And the more I learned about Gab prior to this podcast, the more amazing it is. And as a father of three sons, it absolutely resonates with me. And to be honest with you, I've not heard it. I've not heard of it. I don't know how big your market size, your market share is out here on the East Coast. But I have a lot of listeners out here. Tell us about Gab and the benefits and the value and just the greatness of the idea.
Yeah. So we believe in tech. Mm-hmm. You'd be naive to not think that tech is a part of our life now. But what we provide to parents is safe steps in tech for your kids. If you relate it to swim lessons or a swimming pool with your boys, there is no way you would take them when they were little kids, 2, 3 years old, push them in the deep end of the swimming pool and hope they survive. We know what's happening. They're going to the bottom of the pool and they're going to drown. So what do you do as a parent? You set up swim lessons. You attend the swim lessons. You make sure they know the strokes. When you take them to the public pool, there's rules. You can't go near the deep end without mom or dad or a guardian. You have to have your life jacket on. You have to have your floaties on. All these rules and regulations around swimming in a swim pool, because we don't want our kids to drown. But then we hand them a smartphone built for adults that had no intention of being built for a kid. And we push them in this tech deep end. And then 2 months, 2 years, whatever the time period is, parents are shocked that their kids are addicted to porn, gambling, sexting, bullying, social media, list them all. And we don't believe in living a paranoid life, but if a kid's on a screen, there's a good chance they're going to run into some problems. So we offer devices, phones and watches, no internet, no social media, no addictive games. So a parent can say to a 10-year-old, son or daughter, I know you got baseball practice, or I know you have dance lessons. Here's a Gab phone, put it in your bag. When you need to get in touch with us safely, give us a call or text us. You can even call and text your friends. But we're not adding additional features on there that will drive you to addictions and dangers that are going to get you in trouble. And let's have open dialogue around tech so that then at the right time when you're ready, we'll talk about your maturity level and how you've handled these steps. Then we can get you a smartphone, but we're not doing it out of the gate.
Man, it's so,
that's what we offer, safe tech for kids.
Yeah, that's amazing, because you think about it and the way you described it, it came to my mind almost all of a sudden. It's like, man, when you give a smartphone to, you know, your whatever age, let's say the average age now is probably 11 years old, I would guess. It's almost like you're giving a gateway drug to an addictive person. If you look
here's here's the worst part. We have fallen in love with parental controls. So we get a smartphone. We put parental controls on it. Feel good about them. We hand them to our kid. We talk to parents all the time. More than 75% of parents never go back and check those parental controls again. It's a one and done thing. I put the parental controls on. They hand the kid the phone. 4 months later, how many times has that parent checked to see if those same parental controls, why? Because they don't want to have that conversation with their kid. It's uncomfortable. Have you changed the parental controls on the smartphone I gave you? No, Ma. Okay. Let's just keep rolling. And then pick it. But at some point, the kid either comes and says, hey, I'm in trouble, or worse, the parent catches them. And then the parent is shocked that the parental controls are no longer on the phone. Parental controls are not guaranteed to be locked in. They're just the initial step of a parent saying, I'm going to put some parameter. But these kids were born into tech, into digital. They know how to get around parental controls. My 15-year-old son, there's two kids at his high school. You pay him $150. You give him your smartphone. By the end of the day, all the parental controls, it's like a side hustle. The parental controls are gone. Those high school kids say, hey, homie, here's your smartphone with no parental controls. Enjoy. And all the kids at the high school know who these two kids are. They're like side hustles. They're drug dealers for smartphones.
Wow.
It's crazy.
That is crazy. I saw on LinkedIn, this is your 1 year anniversary as CEO. Today is, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Congrats. Today. Congrats. Thank now you started as chief marketing and growth officer. I looked in your profile. You've been a sales and marketing guy most of your career.
Marketing for the most part.
Yeah.
20 plus, but yeah.
How has that transition been from a marketing officer, chief growth and marketing officer to the CEO?
It's been a juggling act or balancing act between making sure investors are heard and taken care of. They put their hard-earned money in because they believe in us and want a return. Making sure our employees are taken care of, our people, and then spending time with customers so that I can hear firsthand what's going on. When I went into the role, first time being a CEO a year ago, I thought, well, I'll just do it in thirds, 33% here. It's not how it works. There's days where even weeks where I'll spend almost 100% of my time with our people because we've got different challenges going on and need to solve them together. And there's other times where we're raising another round or looking to make a move in our business. And I'm spending a lot of that time with investors. Mm-hmm. So I've learned, looking a year back, it's impossible to do it perfectly balanced, 33% here, there, and the other. I have to prioritize what's the most pressing item first, and then obsess it. Go all in on it, to your point, and be present. Mm-hmm. So that our people at Gab are not feeling like he's sitting here, but he's not really in. He's off. He's thinking about investors or customers. So I've learned to be much more all in whatever I'm doing.
So let me ask you this. What's the most important thing in your organization? Is it mission? Is it core values? Is it vision?
I would say it's our people. And then through our people, we drive our mission. Our mission is the most, to me, the vision is something that I and the leadership team set, the vision and the strategy. And that's more in the tactical details of how we grow the for-profit business. When it comes to our mission, which is safe tech for kids, peace of mind for parents, you don't have the right people on the bus, which I know is a term used a lot. It's really hard to move that mission forward. So our entire leadership, senior leadership team, I would say the majority of them have been burned by a smartphone. Personally, mm-hmm. they've admitted their addiction, or they've had a kid who's been crushed by a smartphone. So they've come from other places, other higher profile jobs, higher paying jobs, because they want to be a part of what we're doing. I've been a lot of amazing places, but this group here of roughly 250 people is the most dedicated to a mission and a cause group I've ever been a part of. And it's because they get to see the immediate result of helping a family with safe tech.
It's almost more than a corporation or a company. It's almost a ministry or an outreach. You probably have pretty pronounced or pretty impactful stories that you've heard from your clients and your customers. Is there one that particularly resonates or sticks out in your mind?
The one for me that, if I look over the past year, means the most to me, because I came from single parent home, first with my mom and then my dad, I have a very soft heart and a special place for single parents. And there was a single mom in Utah. Layoffs have been happening everywhere. She got laid off over a text from her employer at the time. And I heard about it and talked to our senior leadership team and said, I don't know what position we have for her here, but I can't let a single mom with a daughter getting fired over a text be something that becomes the norm. It's just not, we're not doing that. Let's do something for this mom. And without hesitation, our entire team said, let's do it. And within 24 hours, we had hired her. She's been at the company 2+ months now. And bringing her into our culture, which is positive and uplifting, and having her bring all of her talents and value to this place, she's one of the best hires I've ever been a part of. I never interviewed her. She never even stepped into our office before we hired her. So when I talk about our mission of we want to create safe tech for kids and peace of mind for parents, I view that mission and our team views it way beyond just the devices we sell. There's a single mom who just got let go from a job and she's not feeling safe and it's not a good environment for her kid. Mm-hmm. Can we do something about it? Let's do it. We got a family that's fallen on a difficult time because the mom or dad lost a job. If we can help them, let's figure out a way to do it. So it's yes, it's about selling our devices and safe tech, but it's become so much more than that because mm-hmm. our employees care about doing good for people.
So if you're going to describe your culture in one word, what would it be? Just from what you've described about your team and how they all rallied around this particular employee, what would that one word be?
Empathetic. Mm-hmm. Where it's a group that looks for somebody that's down or tries to find somebody in need and helps. There aren't a lot of talkers here. Our senior leadership team is filled with doers. I've never seen a group that does more and takes more positive action to make a difference than this group.
Sounds like it's also genuine empathy, you know, because everybody, you know, you hear that word, I don't know what word we were talking about before, that's, oh, hero, it's thrown around a lot. you know, and greatness and empathy. You know, that's the big buzzword. Everybody, you got to be empathetic. Yeah. And it's true. Inclusivity with your employees, it starts with being empathetic, understanding them. But sometimes I think a lot of that can be disingenuous empathy. But it sounds to me like your corporation, your company is truly has genuine empathy. That rallying point being doing what's best for children, and maybe that, you know, you've had stories and seen what smartphones can do to children, and now you see what you're doing with your technology. It kind of bleeds over into the rest of the operations and the rest of the culture, and it kind of creates that bond, that chemistry that you don't get at other companies.
Yeah, I think the single mom I shared that we brought in, we didn't even interview her. Mm-hmm. She's been an executive assistant for a couple of our senior leaders here, and it's been perfect fit. Right prior to that, we just had a budget meeting. We had an offsite, and we talked about what we can afford, what we can't afford, mm-hmm. how many additional people we can hire and not hire. And we all said, look, this economy's turning. Things are going to get tight by the end of the year. We got to be really smart. That was the bottom line finance, bean counting, execution part of our business. But when I went to that same team less than 48 hours later and said, you're never going to believe this, but I just heard this story about a single mom with a three-year-old that got let go by a text. Who does that? Not one person brought up budget. Not one person brought up, well, if you hire her, is it going to take a headcount away from me? Everyone just said, this is what we do. Let's do it. Bring her in. Let's make it happen. And she shows up 48 hours later. And then 2 months later, if you were here and walking around the office, you'd hear everybody, Lida, love her. She's one of the best decisions. She's one of the best decisions of the year. I can't imagine Gab without Lida. So I think if I stepped out, we have such amazing people that would continue forward. Mm-hmm. And it's because that mission of creating safe experiences for families has allowed us to extend it to other people.
Yeah. I mean, who needs a hiring process? There you go. Just,
We don't interview, just show up.
You guys are one for one for people that you don't hire. I mean, there you go, man. There's the trend right there. You're batting 1,000. I love it.
Yeah. I love it. It'll fail eventually, but right now we're feeling really good about it.
Yeah. No kidding. So, for me, you're part of being a good leader, or an effective leader, I should say. You can't really lead the people that you're responsible for, be it your family. You know, it starts with self-leadership. And you see a lot of leaders out there that, going back to the authenticity, they do and say things that might be contrary to how they live their lives. Talk a little bit about the importance of self-leadership and kind of where we go with this whole well-rounded leaders. Because self-leadership, it transcends just how you treat people, to me. You know, it's what are you doing to take care of your wellness, your physical wellness, your mental? You know, we have to be fully present. We have to, you know, have emotional stability, emotional intelligence. You talk a little bit about how you kind of keep your wits about you and how you lead yourself.
You don't mind, I'll share another personal part of life. My wife and I lost our second child at full-term birth. Her name's Kate. She was perfect. 10 fingers, 10 toes, the chubbiest cheeks, full-term pregnancy. When she came out, her lungs had filled up with fluid and she wasn't breathing and they couldn't save her. And after that loss and watching my wife grieve and spending 9 months with the hope of bringing our second child home and then going home with nothing, I went to a really dark place fast. Mm. And I own it. I had a really hard time. I became a bit of a victim. I started blaming doctors and even though it could have very well been their fault, I got to a bad place. And that bad place caused me to lose a sense of self, and I'm never going back there again. And so I've learned now over 16, almost 17 years since that loss, that my mental health and where I'm at personally and taking care of myself with the right amount committed to God or who I call my Heavenly Father, mm-hmm. the right amount committed to full engagement with my kids and being there for whatever matters most to them. And ultimately through all of that, putting my wife first and making sure that we're still going on dates and that I'm still everything that I want to be in that relationship. I have to be at my very best, not perfect, but at my very best by taking care of myself, because I know how quickly you can go to a really dark place. Mm-hmm. And in that place, I add no value. I was not a good dad at that point. I was not a good husband. I wasn't a good colleague. I wasn't a good son or brother. I was existing. And so when I hear people talk about mental health and how quickly things can, I get it. I've been there. I've been in a dark hole, angry at everybody that I'd lost my child. And with some self-awareness and a lot of work, I've realized how important it is to take care of yourself first.
Making the main thing the main thing. Yeah. You know, the main thing for a lot of people is titles, it's power, it's money, it's all those things that are fleeting and they're not going to be with us long after we're gone. Another great story. You've had quite an impactful background that has shaped you as a man, as a leader, and as a father, as a husband. It's again, refreshing to hear your story and how you had, you know, put the right priorities first. What's the biggest challenge you think facing leaders today?
I think the one that always shocks me that I try to be aware of, but I even miss sometimes, is the disconnect between being a leader and being someone on your team that's looking to you as the leader. I had someone the other day, not at our company, but another leader, telling me how frustrating it was that they had boat problems on the last time they went surfing behind their boat before the winter came, and that their vacation property, they'd had something wrong with it. And I sat there thinking, with another one of their employees there, your employee has got to be thinking, I'm driving a 10-year-old car with 100,000 miles on it. I'm barely making ends meet. And in the context of this lunch conversation, you're complaining about your $150,000 boat and your vacation property in Hawaii that everything hasn't gone smooth. I think leaders often, and not always about possessions, but completely lose sight of or completely disconnected between their life and what they're dealing with and the reality of what their employees or people are dealing with. And I try to stay connected to that because I think our people want to know that we understand, that we've been there, that we want to be there for them in a way that if they need a day off, if they've got a sick kid, that we're saying, absolutely, go take care of them. And we're not so disconnected from their reality that we think our reality is their reality, because it's not always the case. I don't know if that perfectly answers your question, but they're more disconnected now than they've ever been. They're living in different realities, and it's creating a wider gap between senior leaders and the people who are actually executing and delivering for the business.
So you said that you think that it's that way now more than it's ever been. What do you think's driving that?
I don't think COVID helped. I don't think that whole stretch helped, where we were all together and then we were all separated. Now we're trying to figure out this hybrid thing.
Well, you know, we didn't have it down here, so yeah.
Yeah. I just think whatever that period was, it disconnected us.
Yeah.
And then we were all on video and it just wasn't the way it was. And everyone's trying to figure out what the next phase is. And I think through that stretch, even people that were great people leaders lost a little bit of the edge of being connected, stopping by the cubicle or Zoom, whatever your deal is, and just saying, how's your day going? Not project related, not task related, not KPI related, just what's going on?
Yeah.
How are things? How was your weekend? What did you do? Knowing about their hobbies and their interests.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that was gone.
Yeah, it was gone. And then I don't know if we've gotten it all the way back. We've become a little bit robotic and lost some of that personal touch.
And now it's really hard. I think what it's done over the last 2 years, I think it's trained the Z's, the generation Z's. You know, you and I, we're used to going to the office. You know, we come in, we work in the office. Hey, you have that time where you get up the bond, you get to know your employees, you know your employer in a way that you can only get at the office. And then we have this 2 years of separation,
yeah,
lack of community. And I think now you're seeing, I think that led to the transformation of Generation Z and what they define it as the working norm. And it is a challenge. It's a challenge for leaders. It's probably the biggest challenge that they're facing now. And so, yeah, it's a very good point that, you know, we've gone through a lot with the pandemic and we're in a new norm. And the workplace is changing more rapidly than it ever has.
Yeah. We're on a hybrid now. We're 3 days in office, 2 days out. Today is our hybrid. I think there's two other people in here with me. It's not a bad thing. It's just different. When on a Wednesday prior to 2020, was anyone not in the office on a Wednesday? Now, I know people have had remote careers for a long time.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's just different. but we're adjusting. Yeah. Business hasn't dropped off. No. We're finding different ways to stay connected. But for me personally, I have to make a genuine effort, or I can get caught up in all the other details and miss staying connected to our people.
What do you think the biggest character, the most important characteristic for a leader is?
I don't even know what the perfect term is, but less about you and more about them. I think once you get the title, I'll answer it this way. Very recently, I was making the most money I'd ever made in my career, more options than I'd ever had, a great title. I've never been more miserable. Hated it, hated every part of it. And it was a huge wake-up call that if I need a title and more of this and more of that and more to be the leader that some may think that you'd be because of all those things, then I'm not a leader. And it should always be about the people. And if the people you're working with are first and it's more about them and less about you, it's where I try to spend most of my headspace is, this isn't really about me. Does anybody really care who the CEO of Gab is? Probably not. But the people who are here in the trenches executing every day, they care. And what do they care about? They care that I care about them. They don't care that I care about me. So I think focusing on putting people first is one of the most important characteristics that a leader can have. Completely losing themselves to put others' careers, ambitions, directions first, as long as the company is steering in the right way.
That's good. That's good. Because so many times, so many, you know, leaders, it's almost like they feel threatened if they don't come off their perch, or if they do come off their perch and they have to keep themselves up there for their own self-worth. And they don't want to feel threatened by giving somebody else credit for an idea or acknowledge outstanding performance. You know, again, it has turned into that internal customer experience that you can provide, because if you take care of the employees, they're going to take care of the business. As we wrap up here, I always ask a top five, but I'm going to do an audible, because your top, you know, you talked about a top five. It was your top favorite cities. But since you're a sports guy and you mentioned Michael Jordan, I'm assuming you, in the great Michael Jordan, LeBron James debate, you're going with MJ, right?
Oh, not even a question.
Okay, good, yeah. good. Because we'd end the podcast real quick.
Not even a question.
No, it's not even close. It's not. So, but anyways, I want your off the cuff right here. We've already thrown MJ out. Your top five most favorite athletes.
Bo Jackson's one. If you take MJ out, Bo Jackson's one. I remember as a kid watching him and just a beast.
Oh, he's ridiculous.
Griffey's two.
Junior?
Junior. Had the chance to meet him at Nike a few times, and one of the most pleasant, kind, unassuming athletes I've ever been around. He was everything I wanted him to be.
He could ball.
So Bo one, Griff two. Stockton, John Stockton, mm-hmm. three, because I grew up in Salt Lake, and that little pasty gangster was just a thug on the court, and I love the way he played.
Well, you worked for the Jazz too. Was he playing there then, or had he retired?
No, long gone by that point, but would still come back for reunions and things. And I've been around him, and
yeah,
he pulled up to an event in a semi rundown Astro van. I mean, the guy's just. He's like your neighbor that happened to be the all-time assist leader. So that's three. Four, Tony Dorsett, back in the day, the Cowboys.
His running style. I lived in Texas. Again, you brought up Tony Dorsett. I'm Tony Davis, Tony Dorsett. He was my favorite player. He was my favorite player because TD, and I was in Texas, and we liked the Cowboys, the Tom Landry whole thing. And he was my favorite football player for a long time, probably up until until he retired. Well, I lost it for him when he went to the Broncos, but
yeah, I hear you. When he went to the Broncos, I had the chance to meet him. Same, he was every bit of what Griffey. He was so kind, gave me his time. Love TD. Five, and I know I need to speed it up here. Probably Danny White from the Cowboys.
Danny White.
I mean, I know that's old school. That's when I was a little kid.
No, that's way old school.
Loved Danny White and Tony D. I never missed a Cowboys game as a kid because of those two.
Danny White. Didn't he punt? He punted, didn't he?
Oh, he's quarterback.
He was a quarterback, but didn't he also punt?
I think, they would do those fourth and nine. You knew they were going to punt it, but he'd be in shot and then pull up and punt it sometimes.
Yes, I thought for some reason, I thought the Cowboys had I thought Danny White also punted, but not just in those situations. He's an Arizona State guy, isn't he?
I should be able to tell you that.
I love
it. Six is Nolan Ryan.
Oh, Nolan Ryan,
you asked for five, but when he put Ventura in the headlock
and thumped
him, And then I met him when I was at Nike and I said, "Hey, sir, is Robin Ventura on your Christmas card list?" And he laughed out loud and said, "I don't really think so."
Yeah, that's a classic highlight. Yeah. Classic highlight.
Nolan Ryan.
Oh, he's a stud, man. What do you have, 7 no-hitters? Oh, he's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, Nate, hey, I appreciate you coming on. It's been fun. And yeah, if you ever come out to Northeast Florida, it's beautiful beaches out here. You got St. Augustine, we got Ponte Vedra. You come out to the TPC, you know,
I was out there a lot. So I was in the golf business for 10 years. I was there multiple times a year. Now I'm not in the biz and I'm not there as much, but I'd love to get back for sure. When I do, I will definitely text you.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go grab a beer. We'll go, talk some sports. I'm going to put your information in the notes. Hopefully, you can spread the word out here on the East Coast and get a little market share. It's a great idea, great concept. We need it. Everybody needs it. Age is really what? 10 on up?
So our watch, we've got 5-year-olds in the watch all the way up to 16 and 17-year-olds in the phone. So we've got a good age range.
All right. Well, again, Nate, thanks so much. Congrats on your 1-year anniversary as CEO.
Thanks, TD. Appreciate it.
Yep, you got it. As always, thank you for listening and for telling your friends to check out the show and for rating the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Your continued support makes it possible for me to do what I love, which is helping people be the best and become well-rounded leaders in their world. And for that, I am grateful. And until next time, be a well-rounded leader and make an impact.